everybody, and welcome back to Don't Quit Your Day Job. My name is Paul. Today, from somewhere in New Jersey, which is much bigger than most people think of. Maybe we'll talk about the confines of New Jersey. But I have Vincent Marone of Loud Love and Jersey Calling fame. Vinny, thanks for coming on the show.
Oh, thank you so much for having me. And it's fun joining you from the depths in the bowels of New Jersey.
People don't understand. I think people don't recognize that New Jersey has a huge woodland in the in the Pine Barrens. Most people think of New Jersey as like the other side of the river from New York, right?
Right. Either New York or Philly. We're kind of like the bastard child of both metropolitan areas. But Jersey is so big that like it's split into two parts, not three. Some people of my Jersey brethren think there's such a thing as Central Jersey. And they can debate me later, but it's typically North Jersey and South Jersey. I'm actually from the South Jersey part. So.
Okay. So are people from South Jersey fundamentally different from the people of who live near the airport, for example, Newark?
Yes. I would say yes. 1,000% fundamentally different. It's a completely different culture, completely different pro sports team allegiance. All kinds of stuff. Music taste is different. So it's even kind of a little bit of a bone of contention as to which Jersey Shore is better, either the ones in the north or the south. So.
Okay. Huh.
Yeah.
I didn't even know there was a Jersey Shore in the north.
Yeah. Well, you know, the show like Jersey Shore with Snooki and all those guys, that typically takes place up north. Those guys up there have a little bit more of a pop culture flair to them. Whereas down south here, we're more of the more laid back. There's still Wildwood, which is, for lack of a better word and pun intended, a little wild, you know, it's got like the wild kind of stuff going on there, but mostly it's all family oriented or just like kind of couples getaway areas, you know, your Cape Mays, your Ocean Cities, Sea Isle City, stuff like that.
Okay. So now that we've done the whole New Jersey thing and I learned a lot, are you a Philly guy? Do you like do shows in Philly? Is your scene Philly versus whatever the New Jersey scene is?
Yeah. So, well, I was born and raised in Philly. That's where most of my family's from. We're all kind of migrated across the river since, but I was born and raised there. I do a lot of shows there. And that's kind of where the scene where we're at is based out of. I will say that the Philly scene is it's very weird, man. Okay. It's very eclectic, very gatekeepy, stuff like that. So we are affiliated with the Philly scene, but a lot of our stuff happens on this side of the river and also out past the suburbs of Philly into more or less your area of Pennsylvania.
Okay, well, I'm far western Pennsylvania. And like Pittsburgh, people don't even, I guess we consider ourselves part of Pennsylvania, but it's definitely not like the Philly vibe. It's not the Scranton vibe. It's none of that. Like Pittsburgh, western PA is its own thing for sure.
Oh, yeah. And I love it. I every chance I get, I always love coming out west to Pittsburgh or even to like that part of West Virginia where it's kind of like in between PA and Ohio, stuff like that. So definitely more of my speed out in West Pennsylvania.
Cool. So let's talk about some of the things that you do. I want to start with Loud Love. So Loud Love is the way that I think of Loud Love is it's like a Philly thing and it's not a punk rock thing really at all. There are some sort of pop punk songs. I think Just Fine is an example of a pop punk song, but your most recent Let Me Be, that's like a trip hop sort of British-y thing. It's very, very different. And so to me, Loud Love is you getting to be able to do whatever the hell you want, more or less, right?
Yeah, that's basically it. I mean, you kind of hit the nail on the head. It's a catch-all musically and just creatively for all of the crazy stuff that happens in my brain, you know? So I go through times where I'm totally into heavy music and I want to make, you know, there's a song that we're working on right now that is very much kind of like a doom metal breakdown feel, which is, if you can believe it or not. And then, you know, in the next release, I'm releasing a song with Lisa Loeb, you know, so it's like, It's very much all over the map when it comes to genre. But I like it that way. And it kind of allows me to kind of flex and exercise my muscle of creativity as a producer so that, you know, I can kind of get used to what it's like to working with different personalities, different sonics and things like that. So, but yeah, we are very much rooted in Philly and Philly culture and just the overall art scene in the metropolitan area.
Okay. So a song like Croaked, for example, that's like metally, but it's also like Nine Inch Nails, like that sort of vibey. I hesitate to say industrial because I don't get an industrial feel from it, but it's got that sort of production value, which is obviously what you're trying to do with a song like that.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, Croaked is actually, it's a cool tune because it's also part of my philosophy of Loud Love is being able to work with as many people as possible. So our mutual buddy, Jimmy Minarchik, actually helped to, well, he wrote the backbone of that song, really. So he wrote a lot of the riffs that go along with it. And I kind of just did my thing and arranged them in a certain way. But that song is very much, anytime we play it out live, we always call out Jim and, you know, make sure to put him on the spot. But it's just a good example of you know, like you said, bringing different sensibilities in, meshing styles, seeing what different ingredients can make different types of recipes work. And I just love that sort of thing when it comes to creating music.
So does that make putting out a record like The Price of Addiction, which is your most recent full length, does it make putting together a cohesive offering more difficult because someone who's into pop punk isn't going to like some of those songs, plain and simple?
Yes. No, I mean, you hit the nail on the head. It's very challenging in that way. I love the part of the challenge where you're putting together kind of the playlist or the track listing of the record, because in my mind, it's almost like a mixtape. Like you're seeing, or like a DJ, right? The artistry of being a DJ and kind of leading one song into the next and making it tell a cohesive story, or a cohesive sonic story at least. But yeah, when it comes to like getting gigs or explaining to someone what it is that I do or what we do, it's really hard. Or like pitching the playlists, especially, like that's why we do a lot of singles. When it comes to Loud Love, you'll see a lot more singles than you see collected albums or collected works, because it's just easier to kind of explain to people what's going on when it's one singular song as opposed to an entire work, you know?
And that makes sense, especially in 2024. I've had a discussion with artists on this show about what makes sense for releases. Do people still want to listen to 12 songs by a band? Are they even going to get to song 7 before they've, you know, used up their attention span? So what makes sense for any of us right now as we try to put out music? Lots of people go in the singles and or EP direction because 5 songs seems like a good number to stop at. You know, when you're thinking about your output, how are you thinking about those challenges?
Well, I see. I love the idea of both. I'm actually, if I had to prefer one over the other, I'm more of an album or record guy. I love the idea of diving deep into someone's big, grand idea and seeing how that plays out. I'm a big fan of like concept albums, especially, you know, like from your Dream Theaters and your mm-hmm. Rushes and Genesis, stuff like that. So if I had to pick and choose, I would choose an album format. But I totally embrace and respect the folks who get that idea that, you know, the general public's attention span isn't very large anymore. So, right. You know, the singles, the EPs, and kind of taking that idea and challenging myself and challenging the people that I work with to push that to its maximum, how to get the most out of that one song when you're releasing it. You know, whether it's interpreting yourself through song and video, or if, you know, you're writing a piece that goes along with it, that complements it, that people can kind of like, you know, indulge in that creative process part of it, whatever makes the experience a little bit longer lasting is important to me.
And yeah. You've done collabs with some bigger name people. You just mentioned Lisa Loeb. And I know that we in the past have discussed Billy Sheehan and just, you know, people, musicians of some notoriety that, you know, when you're approaching someone to collab, is it really here I have an idea and I want you to be part of the idea, or here's a thing I want you to do this thing specifically?
So I would say 95% of those collaborations that I work on, I already have an idea of who it is that I want to work with. So it's almost like when a screenwriter or a director says, you know, I wrote this part with this particular mm-hmm. actor in mind. Right. Yeah. It kind of works in that way where I've written a song and like I can immediately hear the person's voice, or I can immediately hear, like in Billy Sheehan's case, like the style in which he plays that kind of like all over the place, like riffy, solo-y kind of style. And what I'll do is I'll just throw myself into recruiting them in for the project, you know, and you know, pull out as many stops as I can, you know, within reason, so that it works out. And then if it doesn't, which very rarely it does, I mean, you'd be very surprised on how, you know, willing people are to work with other right. people. But when it doesn't, you know, I just kind of like either put that on the back burner or I think about someone else who it might fit for.
I think that's a good point. What's the worst thing that could happen here, right? Is someone says, no, I don't want to do that, or you don't get a response. Right. People sometimes ask me about this show. You know, I've gotten some people that I've loved. You know, I got Chewy from Voivod on the show, right? And yeah. and some of it is just you do enough shows and now start people asking you about, hey, I'd like to be on your show as well, or publicist. But so, a lot of it is me just sending out emails, right? And it's the same sort of thing that you're talking about. Lots of times people just say yes, and you're just like, holy shit, I didn't expect you to say yes. So I think that's good advice, right? You should try to do stuff.
You should shoot your shot always. That's one of the things, I guess, that that I took away from my former day job, which was working in retail and commercial banking, which is if you don't ask for the business, you won't make the sale. And mm-hmm. I am by no means a salesman. I kind of, that's why I don't do that for a living anymore. But it's a really good, it's a lesson to learn and to practice, because yeah, if you just kind of like sit back and just let things happen, or if you don't try, it's not going to happen. So, what's the harm in trying? I was just right. telling a story to a gentleman I just started working with, and I had told him the story behind, I guess, my very first time pitching a project to someone who was quote unquote in the business. And it was Marshall Goodman, who played drums for and was the DJ for Sublime. Okay. And, you know, now he's in Long Beach Dub All Stars.
Yep.
And I pitched him a couple songs for him to produce and to possibly release together. And this was years ago. But that first time I did it, I failed miserably. He listened to the songs and he was very honest with his critique, and he was very honest about not wanting to work on them. And that failure in and of itself was a way for me to say, you know what, I have to kind of, you know, restructure this and make it better and make myself better. And it kind of prepared me for the next one, you know?
Right.
So it was nice to kind of have that first, you know, that first pitch be shot down so badly, because it kind of gave me the motivation on how to kind of like tighten up the ship and make it work properly. You know?
Yeah. If you don't think you can get better, then I'm not sure what to tell you, right? Because we can all get better always. And that's like the idea of playing in a band, right? You want to be in a band with people better than you, because then you get better, right? You don't want to be the yes. best person in the band.
Exactly. I agree with that. I always say, like, talking about Loud Love, the bassist Pete Cunningham, he's by far a better guitar player than me, most definitely a better bassist than me. But yeah, he always pushes me to do a little bit more, and I love that.
You know? Mentioning Sublime reminds me of Same in the End from the Loud Love album, because it has a Sublime feel. And so my question is that ska? Because I think everyone knows who listens to this show that I don't like ska. So that song stuck out to me.
Yeah. So for Same in the End, that's I've always wanted to cover that song by Sublime, just because it's one of my favorite tunes by them overall. I think like the lyrics have always really spoken to me.
Okay.
And in my mind, anytime I ever listen to the self-titled album that song is from, I always heard the horns, you know, I heard that more of a ska feel, right, you know, right. When I did. So when we decided to do it, that's the direction I wanted to go. I wanted to add those horns and just that overall feel. We slowed down the tempo a little bit to make room for that stuff. And, yeah, I wouldn't say that I'm necessarily a fan of ska. I do enjoy ska very much when I'm, you know, kind of seeing it live.
Right.
Yeah, you know, it was just it was a nice little dip into the water of it to kind of try it out and see and try my hand at producing it.
Right. Yeah. Doing that arrangement stuff is definitely interesting. If we move to a band that you joined recently called Jersey Calling, you know, that's a punk band. That's a pop punk band, alternative band, call it what you want. But primarily it feels like a punk band to me. Why join a punk band when you're doing all this other stuff?
Because I absolutely love Jersey Calling and I love those guys. A little bit of a backstory with them. We met and knew each other back when we were, you know, 15, 16 years old. We used to play shows together a ton. Before Jersey Calling was Jersey Calling, it was a band called Burn Kate back in, you know, the early 2000s. And my first band, First Step to Failure, which was very much like a street punk,
okay,
kind of trash punk band.
Yeah.
We played a lot of shows together. And their bass player now, who's become a great friend of mine, he used to fill in on bass for us if we ever needed it. And we just played a lot of shows with them. And so, you know, eventually we all got older. Over the years, we all kept in touch. But they did not play as a band for many years. I want to say the better part of 15 years. And in 2020, they got back together. And I guess it was just going to be kind of like a pandemic type of project where they got together, make an album sort of thing.
Yeah, cool.
And the fanboy in me was just thrilled. You know, here's one of my favorite bands from my youth putting out a new record. It was great. And lo and behold, couple years later, you know, I'm going to all their shows. I'm, you know, going over their houses for conversations. And, you know, Josh, the lead singer, works with my wife at the same school. You know, it's like one of those things.
Yeah.
And I got a text message from Randy one day and he's like, hey, man, we're doing like a record release show and we, you know, like for you to play guitar on a couple tunes. Are you in? And it was like, yeah, you know, it was a no brainer. And so I show up to rehearsal and we start playing. And it was pretty evident, like from the get-go, that we all just loved being in the same space and playing music together. And they were really digging the extra layer that I added by playing with them. So that's why, you know, they asked me if I wanted to do it permanently. And I said yes, a resounding yes, you know.
The texture that you might add as another guitar player is interesting. Does it require rearrangement of some of the songs? Because again, these are pretty straightforward pop punk songs. And in the video, which we'll talk about here in a second, you're playing acoustic guitar. But how were you fitting in sonically with the rest of the band and how did you discuss what made sense?
Yeah. So, well, one of the things that I've said this to Randy, the bassist, Sean, the guitarist, their recipe is already a winner. It's a home run, you know, so I never typically want to interject myself too much in the way things are arranged or change anything. My goal is to kind of go in and just add, you know, if they've done something in the studio that they typically wouldn't be able to pull off live, like an acoustic guitar, you know, because they're primarily just an electric guitar band.
Right.
I'll bring my acoustic or I'll bring my acoustic emulator pedal and I'll add that layer back there. They're huge on harmonies. Like you mentioned, they're pop punk. So there's a lot of like 3-4, even like, I want to say there's a song or two that has like a 5-part harmony. So getting to add that to their live show has really made a huge difference. There's people that come up to us afterwards and say, man, the vocals were killer because, you know, you have all of these people singing. So I just kind of, my approach is to really just kind of go in, add the little flourishes, maybe the overdubs that you would hear on their records, and just make it a more complete show in that way.
That's cool. The songs are incredibly catchy. And I think, of course, I'll mention now, I'll drop the links for anybody that wants to check it out, as always. But a song like Content, man, I just thought immediately, like, holy shit, there are hooks and hooks and hooks in this song. And I'm not sure why that wouldn't be something I would expect, right? It's almost like, okay, it's a punk band, so I expect some sort of bad songwriting, but that's really unfair and shitty of me to say. But I'm not sure why I was so surprised that the hooks are there. Is that like that's a thing for Jersey Calling, right? Is let's jam some hooks in there.
Oh, absolutely. 1000%. I mean, even if you go back to the first album that they put out, which is called Hang Ups and Hangovers. And, you know, that's the album that kept me, you know, a fanboy all these years. You know, they recorded that album at the time in literally someone's house, in someone's basement. But the songwriting was always there. Josh just has this incredible sensibility of making something sound catchy, mm-hmm. something sound like pop without it being overtly pop or too much, you know?
Right.
Now, the thing about it is, the way that I understand it, is their latest record that they just put out, which is called Parasocial Security.
Right.
They kind of brought in more songwriting influence from Sean, who's been in the band forever, but didn't really get to add as much of a layer of songwriting as he used to.
Yeah.
Or now Josh's wife, Victoria, is also in the band. So she started adding some layers. And it really got to a point where now you have Josh's pop sensibility and songwriting structure in with these like different layers of Sean's just a great songwriter. He writes almost like a Tom Petty or like a Bruce Springsteen or, you know, like Tom Waits or someone like that, you know, where it's just like this really great feel good kind of vibey stuff. So pairing that with the pop aspect of it, it just made it a complete package, in my opinion, anyway.
Yeah, cool. And then the video for Backseat Driver, again, a high-quality video. Any schmo with an iPhone can now make a video and put it up on YouTube, just like we can all record our songs and get them up on Spotify. And you're doing some actual acting in this video, right? You're doing tough guy Vinny in some of the, some of the parts.
Oh, man, yes.
But I guess my question here is, it's easy to throw together a performance video, right? You could even do it at a show and just throw some cameras up. But you guys made a video, and why, right? So what are you hoping to get out of the effort of doing something of higher quality in terms of a video, not the songs?
Well, I think it's the reason why we all still do what we do. And, you know, it's just the idea of still being able to express ourselves, still being able to tell our stories. I think for me, I'm still a musician in my 40s because I just love listening to stories. I love telling stories, interpreting different things that maybe have been around for a long time. So I think it was, now the concept for this was more or less the director's concept in and of itself. So the idea of like these two people fighting over, I guess, like Thanksgiving dinner or whatever. And so the guy's name is Ethan Todd. He's an incredible filmmaker. He's a younger guy, but he gets it, man. I never had so much fun doing anything like this. You brought up Tough Guy Vinny. If you knew what we were saying in those scenes when we were trying to look tough, it was the most bonkers, fun stuff we were saying to each other. I think Randy looks the angriest, but all he was doing was rapping Eminem lyrics, you know? And it was the funnest thing. But it was the idea of like listening to this other artist, this visual artist's interpretation of the song,
right?
Kind of seeing where he came from, and then kind of taking that and putting ourselves into that and really throwing ourselves into that role and expressing that. And I think that's the funnest thing. So we want people, when they watch it, to be able to come back and watch it again and to see a different layer of it and to kind of relate to it in that way, you know?
Right. This idea of expression and wanting to tell stories or get people to listen to the stories that you're telling, it's difficult to do these days because everybody can do it pretty easily, right? So let's talk about my old thing, which is the barrier to entry is very low. So now, does it require you, Vinny Marrone, if you want to put out a solo thing or you want to produce or you want to release records or you want to do stuff with Jersey Calling, how do you rise above? How do you get it in front of other people?
As far as like pitching it to other people, you mean?
No, just like getting your output in front of other people, because everybody's fighting for the same attention span.
Oh yeah, I see what you're saying. The same the same list when somebody's scrolling, and how does how do you get somebody to stop their thumb on your thing?
Exactly.
Yeah. Oh man. I don't know. I think I might have to start going to the gym a little more. So that I don't know. Yeah, that's so hard to even think about. I think it's just like you kind of just put it out there and you hope for the best kind of thing. Mm-hmm. The whole like idea of playlists, are pretty big when it comes to releasing a song, just because there are people who will go to a yoga class and they'll search for a playlist on Spotify. Mm-hmm. And if your song is on that playlist, they're going to listen to your song. Mm-hmm. Or they might go to the gym, or they might be driving, cross country and they need fresh stuff to listen to. So I definitely recommend for artists to pitch themselves. Again, we kind of looping back to earlier, like, ask for the business, put yourself out there, send out as much as you can. The other idea is just to keep on like it was in the old days. You just go out and you talk to people, you network with people, invite them to your show because you want to see their face. Like not just because you want a body in the crowd, but you want them to be there. You want to get to know them and you want them to know what your artistry is about. And if they come back again, that's one more brick to the foundation that you're building. Right.
Right. So what is success for Vinnie Marrone right now? So you got to join a band that you love. That's a win, right? You get to collab with people like Lisa Loeb and Billy Sheehan and lots of other people. You get to create, you get to produce, you get to collaborate. Is that success? Or are you still waiting, like we all won't admit to, waiting in the back of our minds for the big break, right?
Yeah.
How are you measuring it?
Well, I think you kind of nailed it a little bit in the sense that my idea of success is just being able to work with more people and I lose myself when I'm engrossed in a project. So, might have some guys who enjoy like going to fantasy football thing, or they might enjoy going to the casino or playing cards, whatever. My thing is I literally throw myself into projects. Mm-hmm. And that's where I get to clear my head. So that is successful to me. If the projects keep coming, I'm a happy guy. But like you said, like waiting for that big break, I think kind of recalibrating what it means to have that big break over the years is very important. You can make a very good living playing cover songs, four times a week. And you can support a family that way if you really wanted to do that. You don't have to be the superstar on the radio in order to do that. You can be a sound engineer and go on tours and tour the country with other bands if that's your thing. There's all different ways to kind of support yourself, support a family within this industry. It doesn't have to be like getting that quote unquote record deal that like guys like you and I were kind of grown up around. And you can make a go. It's funny, like your podcast called Don't Quit Your Day Job podcast. I'm in a situation where I actually quit my day job recently. Not by choice either. I worked in finance for a long time. I got laid off this past summer. I did find something that I thought would be a nice holdover, and I voluntarily quit something for the first time in my life. And because it didn't work. It was a hindrance on my family. It was a hindrance on our finances, believe it or not. Right. So I'm kind of in this weird situation where I'm doing so much gig work right now, and it's so different for me. Right. But I'm making it work. And if that's what you want to do, then you have a supporter as the guy talking to you. If you're listening to this, do it. Right. Don't be afraid, kind of thing.
It's a different kind of stress, though, right? The hustle for getting the work, getting the shows, getting the gigs, so it's very different from the stability of the day to day. So you get all the benefits of the freedom of expression with all of the horrible, I don't know where my next dollar is going to come from, right? And so how are you balancing all of that right now?
Carefully. I have an incredible support system. I have my wife of almost 13 years, well, 12 years, I guess I should say, married. She supports me and my crazy ideas like mad, and my kids are the same way. I'm a dad of five. And and my oldest is like, you know, she'll be 20 this year. My youngest will be 8. So there's a big range.
Yeah.
But, you know, we make our time, every moment that we spend together is a quality moment. So when it comes time for dad to do his thing, I think it's a little bit easier for them to be able to say, okay, it's okay for you to do that. Because I throw myself into them more than I do anything else.
Right.
So having that support system is key. But yeah, like you said, fighting for every dollar, wondering where that next payday is going to come from. That's something I never had to deal with.
Right.
And it's scary as hell.
Yeah.
And I don't plan on doing it forever, but, I also know that it's going to help me pick the right thing when I'm ready to find that career path again. It's going to make me choose something that's much better for my health and my sanity.
Right, right. Awesome. One last thing here. I would be remiss if I didn't ask you about this, but my understanding is that Philadelphia sports fans are amongst the worst in the entire universe. Can you verify this statement?
I can verify that that is pretty true, for better or worse. I'm a huge Philadelphia Phillies fan, and I can honestly say that I've worn head-to-toe Phillies gear in our rival stadium, and it was a pleasant experience. It was a lot of jest, a lot of, you know, like poking, but like not too over the top making fun. I mean, I was, before they tore down Shea Stadium, I was literally in the last row of Shea Stadium with rabid Mets fans in my Phillies gear, and I never had an issue. I've been to so many Phillies games, and I've seen so many terrible things happen to the opposing team. We don't like the whole, oh, you threw snowballs at Santa Claus, because it happened in the 60s, but I can pretty much tell you that there's tons of other stuff that has happened since then that you could probably still use as ammo.
The batteries is the one that I've heard, throwing batteries.
Yeah, batteries, snowballs, you know, just ruining other professional sports players' lives because we don't like them. Yes, that is very much a thing in Philly. And it's a badge of honor, I guess, for most fans. So power to them.
Right on. Well, I want to – well, thanks for being honest there, Vinny. I think that that's key here. I want to thank everyone who's listening and supporting the podcast. It is very much appreciated. Check out Loud Love, check out Jersey Calling, check out everything Vinny Marone is doing, because it's all very cool stuff. Vinny, thanks for coming on the show, man.
Paul, thank you so much for having me, bud. I appreciate it.